The following program is pre-recorded.
You're listening to election special coverage from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Wisconsin Bureau in La Crosse. Today we've got several different aspects of the election we're going to be looking at. Later we will look at the 87th Assembly, where both of the candidates in that race have been invited to participate in our ongoing election coverage. The 87th is currently represented by Republican James Jimmy Boy Edming, and the challenger in this election, the Democrat Elizabeth Riley, and we'll talk about that race later in the show. Also, the Wisconsin Senate race, Senator Ron Johnson, the Republican, faces the Democrat Mandela Barnes, who's currently the Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, and we'll hear from Rich Kramer about those two candidates. First off, we're in the 3rd Congressional District, in which Congressman Ron Kind is about to retire from Congress and will be replaced either by Republican Derek Van Orden or Democrat Brad Paff. Brad Paff, currently a state senator in Wisconsin. Derek Van Orden, a retired member of the military. He was a Navy SEAL. And we will hear from Brad Paff today. Derek Van Orden's campaign, we contacted them a number of times, and they did not reserve a time for their candidate to speak to us. And so today we hear from Senator Brad Paff, who begins by telling us about why he's running for the 3rd Congressional District.
I'm a proud son of the rolling hills, coulees, and valleys of western Wisconsin, a place that my family has called home since it first came to this country in the 1800s. I was raised on a family dairy farm. It was on that family dairy farm that I learned the western Wisconsin values of hard work, dedication, resilience, and when times are tough, we all come together. I met my wife, Betty, at a 4-H leadership luncheon. We raised our two children right here in western Wisconsin. I currently serve as a Wisconsin state senator. I am a leader when it comes to agriculture issues and rural issues, because that's my background, that's the knowledge, and that's the people that I represent. I've had the opportunity to serve in senior leadership positions at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, as well as serve as our state's Secretary of Agriculture. And again, since January of 2021, I've represented the Driftless region in the Wisconsin State Senate, where I serve as the ranking member on the Agriculture Committee. I serve on the Committee of Job Training and Economic Development, as well as higher education, transportation. And I serve on the committee that oversees broadband, and I'm proud of the investment that the state continues to make in that. You know, I've spent my entire adult life working for the people of western and central Wisconsin, for the people of the state of Wisconsin. And, you know, I've had a tremendous honor of representing them in the Wisconsin State Legislature. And I so much enjoy meeting and speaking to people every single day as we talk about the importance of holding this seat and making sure that we have a member of Congress that is one of us and understands the people, understands the families, understands the communities of this congressional district, and not have someone that, you know, just moved in here in order to run for office being funded by outside special interests. I just think that that's wrong, and I know the people of this district think that's wrong as well.
Let's focus on the economy for a little while. That's an issue that is of concern, especially recently for everybody in this district. It continues to be a top concern among voters nationwide as well, and according to multiple polls. But what can Congress do to address rising inflation, fears of recession? What steps would you say take if you were sent to Washington to put the country on firmer financial footing?
Well, without a doubt, costs are too high. You don't have to go to the grocery store every day to see the fact that costs have gone up. The thing is that we here in western and central Wisconsin, we know how to make things. We need to reinvest in our supply chain. If you reinvest in the supply chain, that'll drive down prices. The best way to reinvest in the supply chain is you invest in manufacturing. You invest in processing. Again, we know how to make things here in western and central Wisconsin. We're innovative, hardworking people. The thing is over the last 40 years or so, this nation has thought that its best practice is to import its way to economic success. And by doing that, we've seen the emptying out of our manufacturing economy, especially in many of these small towns in rural western and central Wisconsin. And that's real dispiriting. It's taken out, not only has it taken out a tremendous amount of the economic lifeblood, but it's also taken out a lot of human capital where people have moved and left. And the thing is that I believe in these areas. I believe in the people, and I believe in the communities, and I do believe that we can make sure that we rebuild our economy. The economy from the middle out is so very, very important. And as a state senator, I've invested in job training and job retraining efforts because we have some of the best technical colleges in the nation. As a state senator, I've invested in infrastructure, broadband, as well as investing in roads and bridges. All of that is so extremely important. And we need to make sure that we have a tax environment that is conducive for our small businesses and for our family farmers. And that is something that I am very, very aware of. And I meet regularly, almost daily, with our family farmers and our small businesses to talk about their concerns that are taking place so we can grow this economy. It is so very important because without a doubt, costs have gone up. And these costs have gone up and they've impacted middle-class families. And that is something that we all have to be aware of. And as a public policymaker, it's number one on my agenda.
The Inflation Reduction Act, speaking of the economy, was signed into law by President Biden amid a lot of fanfare, but the measure passed on a strictly party line vote, and the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office actually says it won't have that big an impact on inflation over the next 2 years. What's an inflation solution that you would like to see that you think both parties could get behind?
Well, I think one of the number one things that we can do at both parties to get behind is continuing to invest in infrastructure. And infrastructure is very broad, but that includes such things as broadband. That includes roads and bridges, reinvesting in our lock and dam system on the Mississippi River, which is so very important here in western Wisconsin. Every spring, input products are brought upriver, and every fall, our grains that are harvested from our farm fields are exported or moved downriver. We need to make sure that we have a 21st century lock and dam system. This is not a partisan issue. This is an issue that all of us are going to benefit from. I think it's also extremely important that we continue to invest in job training programs, more apprenticeship programs, more job certification programs, more that we can do to make sure that our employers have the high skilled workers that they seek. And of course, our workers are second to none when it comes to work ethic and the desire to get out there and to make a difference. We just need to make sure that we connect the dots. But unfortunately, Ezra, what's happened is partisan politics has gotten in the way of all of this. I mean, if somebody proposes something right now, there's got to always be some type of partisan spin that's put on a topic. And that's unfortunate, because where I come from the family farm. I knew every single day it didn't matter, Ezra, if it rained or shined. I knew that those cows had to be milked twice a day. They had to be milked in the morning and they had to be milked at night. There was no excuses. There was no partisan excuses at all. Cows had to be milked. That's the most important thing that had to get done. And I'll tell you, we need more of that thinking in Washington, D.C. right now. We need people in Washington, D.C. that have that farm background. Understand the fact it didn't matter if you were sick. It didn't matter if you have a headache. It just didn't matter. You had to get up. You had to get your work done. You always have to get the chores done. And right now, Washington, D.C. isn't getting the chores done. And as a result of that, the people in Western and Central Wisconsin are not getting their fair share. And I can guarantee you, if I get the opportunity to represent my friends and neighbors and community members in the United States House of Representatives, they will have a member of Congress that will work for their interest and will put their interest first and not put a political party or political ideology first.
Let's talk about public safety for a second. There are multiple sides of this complicated issue. A lot of people perceive that crime is more of a problem in their localities than they think it has been in recent years. And a lot of people perceive the legal system to be predatory toward a lot of individuals in our society. How, as a congressperson, how could you how could Congress balance the need to support and have proper levels of law enforcement so that people can feel safe, and also reform in areas where it's necessary, where people feel as though the legal system is predatory?
We have to make sure that people feel safe in their community. And of the two candidates that are running for Congress in the 3rd Congressional District, there's only one of us that actually has a legislative voting record to provide our law enforcement with the dollars and the tools that they need to do the job. The other individual that's running for office actually is on probation by the TSA for trying to get on an airplane with a loaded handgun. And he also was in Washington, D.C. on that shameful, awful, deadly day of January 6th, in which 5 police officers lost their life. So, I mean, when it comes to law and order, I know there's an awful lot of talk by a particular candidate for the 3rd Congressional District in regards to this matter, but there's only one candidate that's actually walked the walk, and that is me. I continuously meet with my law enforcement. I also meet with leaders within the community, and to make sure that we can balance this, to make sure that people can feel safe and secure within the community, to make sure that we have the community policing, a community policing approach, in which people do not fear law enforcement, that they feel comfortable with law enforcement within their community. The police night out activities that regularly take place in August of every year is something that is a lot of fun, and I compliment for those kind of efforts. I also think that it's something we need to continue to have roundtables, and we need to have conversations in which we bring in community leaders with law enforcement, greater outreach efforts that continue to take place when it comes to after-school programs, when it comes to before-school programs, what more we can do when it comes to mentorship opportunities, just to make sure that people feel comfortable and that the law enforcement as well recognizes their importance in the community, but also understands the community that they're serving. All of that is so very important. And I recognize the serious issue and the question that you raise. And I can tell you that, as a state senator, the best approach is to stay very, very engaged in your community and to make sure that you are there in order to convene and to listen and to make sure that the people and the law enforcement have the tools that they need to succeed.
Since the overturn of Roe versus Wade, the abortion issue is now a state-by-state issue in terms of whether abortion rights exist or whether they are prohibited. Wisconsin's law in particular is 172 years old. There are several options that would be on the table. One would be to leave the issue with the states. One would be to pass some sort of federal allowance for abortion rights. Another option would be to pass some sort of federal restriction on abortion rights. Where do you stand on the issue?
Well, as a Wisconsin state senator, I was the first state senator to call upon Governor Evers to bring us into special session in June of this year after the Alito memo first leaked. And I was proud that he did that. We came into special session, and unfortunately, the majority party in the legislature gave us 13 seconds, and they gaveled us in and gaveled us out. I believe in the following things. As a state senator, I am going to work tirelessly to make sure that Roe v. Wade is codified into state statute. As a member of Congress, I will fight like hell to make sure that Roe v. Wade is codified into federal statute. I believe this is an individual choice. I do not believe that we should be having unelected Supreme Court justices, and I do not believe we should have partisan politicians in this decision-making process. I have been very, very clear in regards to my position on this topic. The opponent that I am running against has been very clear as well. He is against this choice, even in the cases of rape, incest, or the life of the mother. I think he is out of touch with what is happening. I think he's more in touch with the Wisconsin State Legislature in 1849 than he is with the voters in western and central Wisconsin in 2022.
On to health care. Diabetics pay about three times more for insulin in the U.S. than they did 10 years ago. And the average cost of insulin for a U.S. diabetic is about five times more than it is for a Canadian. And that's just to list one medication. Should the costs of any of these drugs be capped? What can be done to help American patients pay more similar levels for drugs than patients do in similar economies?
We have to hold these pharmaceutical companies accountable. That's the first thing we need to do. This is just absolutely ridiculous. My son has type 1 diabetes. And that is something that he cannot go without. He needs to have insulin multiple times a day. And if he doesn't, he will get very, very sick. And I don't even want to imagine what will happen after that. The thing is that Congress has brought forward capping insulin at $35. And the thing is, for whatever reason, it turned into partisan politics. And I stand ready to hold these pharmaceutical companies accountable and to make sure that we cap the price of insulin because this is not something that individuals, you know, cannot take. They must have this. But I think number one, we need to hold the pharmaceutical companies accountable. Number two, we need to move generics. When it comes to prescription drugs, we need to start moving generic opportunities at a quicker time frame. So that when it comes to patent protections and other trademarks, we need to recognize the fact that there are some federal dollars that are put into these research for these new drugs as well. So, you know, we need to work with FDA to make sure, obviously, patients are protected. But, you know, what more can we do to speed this process along a little better as well? We need to definitely recognize the fact that there is, there is value in bulk buying. I know that has become such a partisan issue, and that's so unfortunate. But again, you want to talk about a subject matter that has just fallen into the quagmire of partisan politics and, quite frankly, special interest politics. You start looking at the pharmaceuticals and what that has done, especially into areas like western and central Wisconsin. We're a rural area. We are, you know, rural people here. We're hardworking, dedicated, resilient people. But the thing is that we also can recognize the fact that we're getting taken here. And we're getting taken when it comes to this. And it's unfortunate. So, you know, I'll stand up and I will definitely make sure that, the people that come into my office recognize the fact that I will fight for their interests to make sure that we lower these overall costs of drugs.
State Senator Brad Paff is with us. He is the Democratic candidate in the race for Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. That election is on Tuesday, November the 8th. And Senator Paff faces Derek Van Orden, the Republican candidate in that election. I want to spend the last couple of minutes, turn it back over to you, Senator Paff, and just give us what you think distinguishes you from your opponent in this race, Derek Van Orden, and why you hope voters will consider your candidacy.
Well, this race really is pretty clear cut. This race is one candidate is about chaos. The other candidate is about community. I am running against an individual for Congress who, I'll just say it, he's an interloper. He moved into this district in 2019 for the sole purpose of running for office. He ran against Congressman Ron Kine in 2020. Now he's running again here in 2022. Since that time, he's been in the district. It's all been about chaos. It's been about division. It's been about, pitting people one against the other. He was part of that January 6th insurrection, that shameful, awful, deadly day. He marched into a public library in June of 2021 and verbally harassed a teenage librarian aide about a book display celebrating Gay Pride Month. He interned, tried to get on an airplane with a loaded handgun. He now is on probation by the Transportation Security Act, the TSA. These are not Western Wisconsin and Central Wisconsin values. I was raised in Western and Central Wisconsin. I was raised on a family dairy farm in Northern La Crosse County. I met my wife at a 4-H leadership luncheon in La Crosse County. We raised our two children here. I have spent my entire adult life working for the people of this region. I've spent time at the U.S. Department of Agriculture as a senior leader. I served as our state secretary of agriculture. I know the people of this district. I know the communities of this district. I know their hard work, their dedication, and their resilience. And I also know this: when times are tough, they don't pass the buck. They don't blame somebody else. They don't run to their respective corners. We come together and we try and find common ground. We maybe don't always agree on everything, but we're not so terribly disagreeable, because we know at the end of the day, we got to get the job done. Those are my ethics. Those are my values. That's what I was raised with. And that's the people of Western and Central Wisconsin. For the last 42 years, this district has been represented by two individuals. One, a Republican, Steve Gunderson, who represented this seat for 16 years. The other is Congressman Ron Kind, who's retiring now after 26 years. Those individuals knew that in order to accomplish things, they had to reach across the aisle and to find common ground in order to accomplish what we wanted and what we needed in Western Wisconsin: roads, bridges, to make sure that we had the dollars available for job training and retraining so our businesses, our small businesses, can continue to succeed. They understood that. Those two individuals, Steve Gunderson and Ron Kind, are my role models. They're my political role models. And if I had given the opportunity to represent Western Central Wisconsin, U.S. House of Representatives, I will follow the practice of Congressman Gunderson and Congressman Kind by reaching across the aisle, doing my level best to find common ground. And I can guarantee the people of this district that you will be proud of your member of Congress, because that member of Congress will not be out in Washington, D.C. to play partisan games, will not be in Washington, D.C. just to create political havoc, but will be in Washington, D.C. to make sure that the people and communities of this district are being heard and we're getting our fair share. You know, the opponent I'm running against, he was part of something on January 6th in which he decided he did not believe in a peaceful transfer of power and thought that he could, what January 6th could disrupt a peaceful transfer of power. And that is the ultimate disrespect of the voters.
That's State Senator Brad Paff, who is running as the Democrat in the race for the 3rd Congressional District. He faces Republican Derek Van Orden on Tuesday, November the 8th. And the winner of that election will replace Representative Ron Kind as the representative for the 3rd District of Wisconsin. Coming up next, we look at the Senate race. It's Ron Johnson and Mandela Barnes, and offering us those profiles will be WPR's Rich Kramer. So stay tuned for that. You're listening to special election coverage here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Special coverage of the 2022 election on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Wisconsin studio, and we're turning our attention now to the Senate race that is on the statewide ballot, in which Senator Ron Johnson, a Republican, the incumbent, faces Democratic Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes in that race for Senate. Despite being seen as a vulnerable swing state, incumbent Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson has embraced controversy in his bid for re-election this year, And with the help of millions of dollars from Republican donors and groups, he's also relentlessly attacked Democratic challenger Mandela Barnes. As Rich Kramer reports, there are signs the approach may be working.
There are different ways to run campaigns in a 50-50 state like Wisconsin. There's the cautious approach, and then there's the one being taken by Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. During a recent gathering of a couple hundred Republicans at a Racine County Fairgrounds pavilion, Johnson delivers what sounds momentarily like a typical swing state speech. He calls for unity, and he says Republicans want to heal the nation.
Aren't you getting tired of the division and the anger?
But Johnson quickly pivots. He accuses Democrats of purposely driving up the cost of gas to force people into electric vehicles. He blames Democrats for inflation, saying it amounts to stealing people's savings. And he says progressives, like Democratic challenger Mandela Barnes, want to change the country because they don't like it.
This fundamental transformation of America is fundamentally destroying this country. We got to save it. These people have to be stopped.
The crowd at this rally feeds off of Johnson's remarks. Rich Strom, a Republican living near Burlington, says he likes that Johnson stands up for what he believes.
He's not your ordinary politician. He's a successful businessman, and he doesn't give the politically correct answers all the time. He does state things the way they are.
The list of Johnson's controversial statements is long. In just the past couple years, he has frustrated public health officials when he repeatedly questioned the safety of the COVID-19 vaccine. Republican Mary Lacombe of Union Grove says she agrees with Johnson.
He's been behind the COVID stuff. I think he's really gotten behind the people that have been, say, vaccine injured or worse.
Johnson has also downplayed the violent insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. And recently, text messages came to light showing Johnson's office tried to deliver slates of fake electors to former Vice President Mike Pence the day of January 6th. Former Democratic State Senate Majority Leader Chuck Kawala says Johnson's involvement in the fake election scheme shows he's an enabler of Republicans pushing for autocracy.
He is not the one strategizing to make it happen, but he will help them make it happen, and that is a terrible danger for our democracy.
Johnson's controversial approach has worn thin with some Wisconsin voters based on years of polling by the Marquette University Law School. In recent years, a growing number of voters have held a negative view of Johnson. But Scott Jensen, a Republican lobbyist and former Speaker of the Wisconsin Assembly, says favorability ratings aren't the only thing that win elections.
Ron Johnson may not be able to improve his numbers, but he can dramatically reduce Mandela Barnes' numbers.
A Marquette poll in August showed Barnes leading Johnson by 7 percentage points among likely voters. But after Republicans spent tens of millions of dollars attacking Barnes for being soft on crime, that lead disappeared.
I think some of the early post-primary polling was too friendly to Barnes.
That's Jessica Taylor, the Senate and Governor's editor for the Cook Political Report.
Sources I talked to and my own analysis was that this was never going to be a 7-point race or something. Wisconsin is just too close for that, that this is going to be a 51-49, 52-48 race.
Several recent polls have showed Johnson leading Barnes, though the race remains tight. Taylor says the attacks on Barnes have been so successful that even if people dislike Johnson, there will be some who vote for him anyway. Rich Kramer, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Rich Kramer with that report on Ron Johnson's campaign. Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes sailed through the Democratic primary in Wisconsin's U.S. Senate race, thanks in part to his progressive record and prominent liberal endorsements. But the very things that made him a favorite among the Democratic base have been attacked as liabilities in his campaign against Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. Rich Kramer offers this report.
On a rural St. Croix County farm in mid-September, a small crowd of Democrats have come to rally behind Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. Minnesota U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar is the featured speaker. She praises Barnes and says he would compliment Wisconsin's other senator, Democrat Tammy Baldwin.
And in my mind, you shouldn't have one incredible, awesome, respected U.S. senator out of the state of Wisconsin. You should have two.
Barnes won the Democratic primary for Senate with endorsements from progressive icons like U.S. Senator Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Klobuchar is a different kind of Democrat. She's run as a moderate, and at this rally, she's appealing to a different kind of voter.
and you tell your friends, whether they are independents, moderate Republicans in this district, a district that has supported Democrats in the past, you tell them our very democracy is on the line.
But in a hyper-competitive state like Wisconsin, that's easier said than done. Since the primary, Barnes has been hit with a wave of Republican attack ads describing him as a radical liberal. And they appear to have made a mark.
The Republicans are putting on a clinic right now.
That's UW La Crosse political science professor Anthony Chergosky.
They are putting on a case study in how to run an effective negative campaign against an opponent.
The main attacks against Barnes have portrayed him as soft on crime.
Do you feel safe? Mandela Barnes would eliminate cash bail.
Some show video of him suggesting funding from law enforcement can be shifted to pay for social services. Others highlight his calls 4 years ago to cut the prison population in half. Republicans have amplified their message with money. An analysis by the watchdog group Open Secrets shows that between the candidates and outside groups, Republicans have outspent Democrats by roughly $20 million. Democratic strategist Joe Zepecki says despite that, it's still a close race between Johnson and Barnes. He says Democrats at the national level should take notice.
In the 11 elections statewide since Donald Trump won in 2016, the Democratic candidate or the Democratic-backed candidate has won 10 of them. 10 of 11. We know how to win here, but we need the resources to do it.
This month, the Barnes campaign is trying to shift voters' focus back to Ron Johnson. They've run ads highlighting Johnson's long anti-abortion record.
But it's Johnson's views that are alarming. Johnson supported a ban on abortions.
And Barnes has taken that message on the road. During a stop last week at an Eau Claire cafe, Barnes met with a group of women to talk about the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling that struck down Roe v. Wade. He says Johnson's past votes for a national abortion ban are too extreme for Wisconsin.
The reality is Ron Johnson is just not there for us, and he is not the person to be trusted when it comes to women's health.
The UW La Crosse's Chergosky says the counterattack could mean the race hinges on a sliver of independent voters. He says they'll have to decide whether they see Barnes as a candidate who has said things about public safety that make them uncomfortable, or whether they see Johnson as a candidate out of step with the public on abortion. Rich Kramer, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And both of those reports from Rich, the one on Ron Johnson and the one on Mandela Barnes, can be found at our website, WPR.org. Coming up, we're turning our attention to the 87th Assembly race, where Jimmy Boy Edming faces Elizabeth Riley in the election on November the 8th. We'll talk about that race coming up here on Wisconsin Public Radio. It's special coverage of the 2022 election. Thanks for listening. It's special coverage of the 2022 election from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in La Crosse, looking now at the 87th Assembly District. The race between the incumbent, Republican James Jimmy Boy Edming, and Democrat Elizabeth Riley. Tuesday, November the 8th is Election Day, as a reminder. And the 87th Assembly, if you were wondering, is part of Sawyer County, most of Sawyer County, really, Rusk County, Taylor County, and then part of Marathon County. We offered each candidate the opportunity to speak to us at WPR, and James Edming's campaign did not reserve a time to talk to us. And so today we hear from the challenger, Democrat Elizabeth Riley, who begins by telling me about why she's running in the 87th Assembly.
I am a registered nurse by profession. I work as a discharge planner at a critical access facility. So some of our hospitals in rural Wisconsin are critical access hospitals, and I work at one of those. Former professor of nursing. I've had a long career between nursing and higher education. So I tend to approach everything from a healthcare standpoint. I'm running for office. This is not the first time I've run. This is actually the fourth time I've run for office, for this office in particular. Running for office did not occur to me until 2010, when Governor Walker and the Republican legislation passed Act 10, which affected not only my husband, who was a public school teacher, but most of the people that we know. And at that point, I thought, well, I've been a spectator far too long. I have to get involved. And since that time, we have watched the problems that have been associated with the current legislature increase exponentially, not just in Wisconsin, but across the country. So I have more passion than I ever have in running for this office. And if people say, what is the main thing you're interested in? Basically, all I can do is say all of it. Women have lost rights to their own bodies. Those are gone now. And the Wisconsin legislature, including my opponent, doesn't seem to want to provide us our rights in return to try to get them back at all. Our state is suffering in education, not being funded at the state level as it should be in our K-12 programs, as well as our university programs. We have seen the systematic disenfranchisement of voters throughout the states, especially in densely Democratic-leaning areas. And I am watching as we get our air and water controls rolled back with large capacity wells and very little oversight for these things. So it's all part and parcel of the same thing. If we can't vote, we can't make anything that's good happen for us. And everything is part and parcel of the same thing. It's all interconnected. So to ask why I'm running, I would say it is to save the state of Wisconsin.
On the issue which you mentioned before of abortion, you referenced women's reproductive rights. Wisconsin's law that's now in effect with the overturn of Roe versus Wade is 172 years old. And according to a recent Gallup poll, 13% of people oppose abortion in all circumstances, while 35% say it should be legal under all circumstances, and 50% say it should be legal under at least some circumstances. How would you like to see Wisconsin's existing abortion law be updated or adjusted in light of what you said earlier?
Well, I feel like a lot of people feel in that nobody is for abortion, but reproductive health care is women's health care. And the fact that a bunch of people can sit around and say, you know, we've decided that women are not capable of making their own determination for what's best for them, is a huge problem for me. I don't think that we need to look at this in terms of, well, we will consider abortion in the case of rape or incest. Nobody knows what goes on behind somebody's closed door in their own home. And it's nobody's right to determine what should be okay for someone and what's not okay for someone. That is a very personal decision that women make, and it should not be infringed upon by people who think they know better and very paternalistically think that they have the right to make decisions for half of the human population.
Elizabeth Riley is the Democratic candidate in the 87th Assembly District. She faces the incumbent Republican James Edming in the November 9th election. The 87th Assembly District is including Sawyer, Rusk, Taylor, and Marathon counties, or at least parts of some of those counties. Elizabeth, onto the issue of elections. Despite multiple government audits that show no evidence of fraud in the 2020 elections, some Wisconsin voters still have concerns lingering about election integrity. How do you address those concerns and restore faith in the voting process for people who might have some doubts there?
I would ask those people to please look at the evidence and to turn off their Facebook feeds and their Fox News channels. There have been multiple recounts in multiple states, in multiple areas, by multiple people. In Wisconsin, we've just wasted almost $700,000 of our taxpayer money to chase down
voter fraud that does not exist. And there are some individuals out there who are going to refuse to believe the truth simply because they are so far caught up in lies that have been told for the past 2 years about the elections in this country. And they just aren't going to be able to see it. But I think if media outlets stopped pretending like this is a on the one side and on the other side kind of issue, because it's not. There is no real election fraud. 3-4 cases in the state, 6 cases in one state, 8 cases in another. This is not a problem. It's cooked up by people who would like to sow distrust, because if Americans don't trust elections, it's very easy to manipulate them. And there are a lot of people being manipulated right now. A lot of people are not going to like to hear me say that, but it's the truth.
Education is an issue that you mentioned being important to you. What would be your top priority in terms of education legislation?
I think my top priority would be somehow giving teachers the rights that they used to enjoy as afforded to them by their expertise in education, that they know what they're doing in a classroom, that they know what to teach and they know how to teach it. At this point, we have too many people who are not teachers, who don't know anything about teaching and who don't know anything about education, deciding what is appropriate for either their children or the children in their communities to learn about. And teachers have been pushed to the sideline. They are not able to have any say in curriculum. They're not able to have any say in class size. This is all, I can also say too, that they are no longer even allowed to claim on their tax deductions the money they spend furnishing their own classrooms with supplies. Let's not forget that you can deduct the cost of your fuel for your private jet. And I always like to remember that when I look to see what teachers no longer can claim on their taxes. But I think this is a problem. I think, this is my opinion, I think that there are many people who have realized the value of trying to keep people ignorant, because an ignorant workforce is a malleable workforce. And I think there is a push on not to educate people in the state of Wisconsin and, frankly, across the country, because what we saw happen here starting in 2010 has exploded across the country. And I think by removing teachers from the equation, that was step one. And then stop your funding, that's step two. I think this is an insidious thing that's happening in education, and it has to be stopped.
You talked about teachers needing to have authority over what's taught in their classrooms. You have a lot of parents that are speaking out now saying that they should have more influence over what's taught to their children at school. What is the role of parents in determining either curriculum or what's taught about specific things like social issues, like race or sexuality, those kinds of things?
You know, for the life of me, I do not understand why parents would stand in the way of teaching accurate history to their children. And to say that we cannot teach, first of all, critical race theory is a theory taught in law school. That's never even been taught in a K-12 program at all. It's just something that got thrown out there as red meat for parents to get upset and hang on to as a horrible thing, and it doesn't exist. But to try to pretend that much of our history has unpleasant things involved in it is a terrible, terrible mistake. And because people are not happy with the fact that that is our history, rather than coming and facing it, they would choose just to sweep it under the rug. And if we're going to continue to do that, we're going to continue to have race problems in this country. That's all there is to it. The same is true for healthcare. If we don't teach about proper healthcare, if we don't teach accurate healthcare and reproductive care, we're going to have a whole bunch of people growing up to not know anything about this, and it's going to come back and hurt them in the end. I cannot understand why there are parents out there who get incensed when we say we're going to teach a unit on slavery, or we're going to teach a unit on the Holocaust. These things existed.
On another issue that I want to make sure we address before our conversation comes to a close, the environment is an important issue, especially in the many rural parts of Wisconsin, including the district that you're running to represent. How should the state address environmental issues? You've got PFAS contamination, other water quality issues that people are concerned about. You've got concerns about concentrated animal feeding operations, CAFOs, potentially polluting aquifers and waterways. What should the state legislature be doing to make sure that our environment is protected?
I think, first of all, they need to restaff the DNR with scientists and people who have a vested concern in things like keeping our air and water clean for future generations. We have not had that. We haven't had oversight. I think that local control would be a wonderful place to start. But then again, you get back down and you have to look at who it is you're electing to be on your local board. You, generally speaking, are going to need to find people who are willing to be educated about the effects of climate change and to actually try to do something about it, looking at the long term instead of short term gains. So, number one, get scientists back on board. Look at evidence. Look at what's happening. Talk to experts, and then do what we have to do in order to decrease our carbon footprint. It just seems like such an old phrase to use, decrease our carbon footprint. But we have to, because if we don't, we're not going to have a planet to share for our grandchildren or their grandchildren. I mean, you ask why I'm running, or if anyone does, it's for my grandchildren and your grandchildren. I am not seeing the changes we have. I don't see people looking at the long term. Rather, I see them looking for short-term monetary gain and things like mining and not having any controls on emissions, not having any controls on pollutants is just going to make things worse. We need to be dedicated to this.
Our time is quickly running out, but I want to give you a very brief opportunity to highlight in specific terms what separates you from your opponent, the incumbent in this race.
I don't even know how to answer that at this point. I'm sure he is a nice person. I've met him before. I've talked to him. But I don't think he's dedicated to the people of Wisconsin. I believe he thinks he is, but I don't think he really is. I am dedicated to the people of Wisconsin, and it's not just Wisconsin. After I lost the election in 2016, I searched about for something I could do that would make me feel of a little bit more value, and I stumbled into what was going on at Standing Rock, and I applied for a position as a medic there and was accepted and spent 10 days there putting my money where my mouth is, trying to make things better, trying to help people recognize what the problems are with things like power lines, and don't even get me started on Enbridge, speaking of the environment. The other thing I did was in 2020, when COVID first came on the scene and people were dying by the thousands in New York, I heeded the call and I went and worked in an ICU in New York for 3 weeks and actually got quite sick with COVID myself while doing it. I actually do the things that I think need to be done. I genuinely care about people and about the earth and about our civilization and our planet.
That's Elizabeth Riley, the Democratic candidate in the 87th State Assembly District. She faces the incumbent Republican James Jimmy Boy Edming on Tuesday, November the 8th. We also heard today about that Senate race between Senator Ron Johnson, the Republican, and the Democrat Mandela Barnes, currently the Lieutenant Governor. Also heard about the 3rd Congressional District race between Republican Derek Van Orden and Democrat Brad Paff. That race to replace Ron Kind as the representative in the 3rd Congressional District. So a busy day today of election coverage, and you've heard it all here on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall. I want to thank Rick Ryer, Joy Ratch Kramer, Kate Spranger, Shireen Seewert, and so many others who help us out throughout all of the programming, local and statewide, that you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio every week. And thank you very much for listening today, and check out WPR.org for more election coverage on the 2022 election from Wisconsin Public Radio.